Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Kevin from Flushing, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Alanna Moore and Patrick Riley famously made their first record under the name Tennis after spending most of a year sailing down the Atlantic coast. Well, that album, that sailboat, and pretty much everything Tennis used to be is a million miles away at this point. The band's most recent record is called Ritual in Repeat. There's nothing redundant about the sound that Tennis has dialed in this time. The band joins us here in the Soundcheck studio, and they're going to start us off with a piece called Never Work for Free. Nice to have some repeat guests here in the Soundcheck studio in Alanna Moore and Patrick Riley.
Thank you. It's nice to see
back.
A familiar face.
Alanna singing and playing keyboards and Patrick playing guitar. And also with us today, Patrick Meese behind our drum kit, Tiffany Meese doing backing vocals, a little percussion and some keyboards, and Nate Meese on the bass.
There's a lot of Meeses here.
Yeah, was that like a package deal? You wanted one and the other two came along?
Exactly.
Yeah, there was like a buy two, get one free special. And we
very
took
nice.
It.
Now, I'm glad you started with that song. I think it might be my favorite track from the new record.
Thank you.
Even though I'm not sure what it's about. But the cynic in me looks at that title and thinks it's about music streaming online.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote that phrase actually just because I liked it meaninglessly in a poetic sense, and then I just started filling it out from there. So this is one of those songs that could kind of mean whatever you want it to mean. For me, it's more specific. It's more about relationships. But I really wanted to ambiguate this song. I like that about poetry often, that it can mean whatever the listener brings to that.
Right. Well, here at Soundcheck, our guests work for bourbon and scotch, so
we do get paid deal. In booze.
So the songwriting for this album, has the process changed for the two of you since that first set of songs, now 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've really ever had a dedicated process. I think we're still figuring this out, as is everyone. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, some songs are written really easily. Some songs literally just write themselves. We like sit around and in an hour we have the song completely finished. And then there's others that take 6 months and we have 40 different versions of the same song. Mm. And it's hard to determine which version is correct, which version is better.
The title Ritual and Repeat really came from this discovery of us almost creating this mindless routine that would keep us from reflecting or criticizing our work as it was being made and waiting for it to be done first and then know how we felt about it. We're in this cycle where we had a million unfinished songs but no album to show for
it. We were trying to like reduce our critical selves to nothing.
So what would the ritual, what would those rituals that you repeated, what kind of things would you do?
It was really bland, more like a 9-to-5, basically. Our day started early in the morning. We work more, our creative minds work best in the morning, not at night. So we just focused on that, and we had a routine. We wake up this time, we eat at this time, this many hours on this instrument, this many hours I write lyrics, this many hours working on old things that need to be finished, and we just did not deviate from this. Almost like we were clocking in and out at an office until it was done, and it felt very like un-rock star-ish or romantic or, you know, full of inspiration. But we noticed that we were liking what we were doing as the weeks went by.
And what I noticed is, and I'm sure other people have mentioned this to you as well, is the sound of like 1960s pop, which was written exactly that way by the teams working in places like the Brill Building, Goffin and King, Lieber and Stoller, and they were teams. And
absolutely.
You know,
I just read Carole King's memoir, and I loved reading about that time in her early days where she would just literally go to like that high rise in Manhattan with cubicles and just write hits.
And it was a 9-to-5 job. You sat down, you wrote lyrics, and your partner wrote music, and sometimes you switched off a little bit. But is it that clearly delineated for the two of you?
It changes from time to time. I mean, I think for us, it's like the closer we get to the song, we almost hold it too closely, and we can ruin it in that way. So we're always trying to like be conscious and try and be like third person to our music and try and just play as like as if we don't really know ourselves.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to do, and that's where a producer can come in handy. And you guys went for like a trio of high powered ones
sure
on
did.
This record, which maybe we can talk about that in a minute.
Absolutely.
But let's hear another song first. You want to do Needle and a Knife next?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Thank you. Masters of Tennis making a return appearance here on Soundcheck after a number of years. At this point, Elena, is the whole sailing story, is that like a millstone, or is it a nice to have a weird origin myth for the band? Not a myth, but a true story?
Well, yeah, definitely. It doesn't feel like a millstone. It's a really important part of our lives and kind of what led us to this whole creative experience. But I definitely feel like as far as tennis is concerned, it was very important for us to be able to write
on dry land
from that. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Kind of reconstitute ourselves and see what else we can do outside of that one thing.
No, and that was like a really creative moment for both of us. And I think like we had to prove to ourselves that we could be creative outside of that experience. And that's been a challenge, but I feel like we've done that.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, for the media, for folks like me, you know, for shows like this, it's like, oh, yeah, the band that sailed down the Atlantic coast, you know, becomes like a thing, you know. But Patrick, I want to go back to a thing that you said just a few minutes ago. Two things, actually. One was that you have some songs that come really fast, they're done, and others sit around in like multiple versions.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was trying to have that third person view of your own
work. Yeah.
In both of those cases, that's a where a producer can come in handy. So this is where I want to talk about the triumvirate of producers that you guys have working on this record.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly pretty simple. We when we finished our album, or what we thought was our album, we had like 15 songs or something like that. And we kind of divvied it out and made like this dream team where it's like, hey, it'd be really cool if Patrick Carney did these songs. They feel like they need a little more like aggression and a little more like rhythm focus. And then we had a group of songs where, like, it'd be so cool if Richard Swift did these, because he is, like, really good adding soul and, like, kind of capturing character and liveness in tracks. And then there was a few that we thought Jim Eno, he's, like, really good at detailed production. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we had a few that were just, like, perfect for him. And the funny thing is we wrote down all these names, Patrick Carney, Jim Eno, Richard Swift. And we called all of them, and they all said yes to this. And they all, like, we thought for sure we'd be like, oh, yeah, one of these people is, going to cancel or not be available or something like that. But they all were available, and it all came together.
Which is, you know, especially given that both, you know, Jim Eno's band, Spoon, was working on a new record.
Yeah, they were working on that at the time.
And Patrick Carney's Black Keys also, you know, like out on tour.
Well, and Richard Swift plays bass in the Black Keys. Yeah. And then he also plays in the Shins.
The Shins, of
course. So he's kind of, they're all like super busy guys. And I don't know how it really worked out, but it did.
So, the question then becomes, Was the album a coherent thing before you brought them all in? Were you concerned about three different kind of perspectives coming through?
We love all three of them for similar reasons. So I feel like there's a lot of overlap in their taste and in their style. So I really wasn't worried about it being too disparate. Mm.
But at the same time, like, I'm such a control freak. I'm a total dick in the studio. Like, everyone knows this. Like, I think everyone's had the moment.
This is everyone else's chance to say, no, not Patrick.
No, we'll just be quiet.
Yeah.
Silent.
But I think because of that, because I'm like kind of a control freak over things, I think, you know, I'm the monkey on everyone's back that's, you know, dictating it in a small way.
Mm. Does Patrick Carney take kindly to being dictated to?
No.
I don't think so.
I love watching them.
We're
go
great
at
friends,
it.
But like, it's funny. We'll like have huge disagreements over songs.
That's awesome, actually. Pat Carney is really good for that. He'll just be like, dude, no.
But that's the thing. I don't want someone to just sit around and agree with me because I'm wrong half the time.
Uh-huh. Now, last spring, you guys did something really interesting at NYU as part of their Kid Rockers program. Mm-hmm. What was that?
The most fun thing ever. We just played a show to like 5-year-olds and they threw balloons around and danced. And
they had no concept of like success or like stardom or anything, like any of the baggage that gets attached to music but actually has nothing to do with music.
They just genuinely don't care who you are. They just want to like pop their balloons and like dance. So it was very fun. Everyone just kept asking us to play songs from Frozen.
Do you have any songs from Frozen?
That's where we screwed up.
It's all we're playing tonight, actually.
So what were you playing? Were you like...
We just played our own songs.
Yeah.
But what were they, these songs? Were you kind of demoing the songs?
No, I think we had these were written at the time. We tried to play like our most kid-friendly, you know, least profanity. I'm just kidding.
There's not a whole lot.
Less sexual motives.
I write for my mom. I mean, we just did, like, mostly songs from Cape Dory and stuff, just, like, surf beat pop songs that it was very fun.
Well, that surf thing, you know, it's still, you can still hear it in some of the new album, but there's also, you know, a kind of a soul funk kind of vibe on some of the songs. There's one or two that have a big sweeping, almost Burt Bacharach kind of orchestral sound to them. So it really seems like
Jim Eno was really influential in our transition into listening to a lot of soul music. We started listening to a lot of Shuggie Otis with him. And that
Shuggie
kind of,
is the guy who wrote Strawberry Letter 23.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Jim was very, we worked with him earliest on in the album cycle. So he was very influential in, like, setting the tone. Like, after we worked with him, we went and wrote, like, Needle and a Knife and I'm Callin' and other more, like, very, like, just rhythm-oriented songs.
I'm Callin' is a really nice one, and that's the one you're going to play next, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. Let's hear another live performance. The band is Tennis. And here's a performance of the song, I'm Callin'. Elena and Patrick, it's been great having you guys back with us. I have one more question before I let you go, which is, you know, we talked a bit about how the songs get written, how they get produced, but that's not the end of it. I mean, some of these songs, to me, sound like they've already now evolved past what's on the record.
Yeah, they change a lot live. Since we write just the two of us and record usually just the two of us, we have to give ourselves freedom to let that song, the song comes out, you know, its own way in the studio. And then once we're live and our limitations of just, you know, like two sets of hands and only one singer.
And then three Mises.
Right, yeah. Which we had to bring on accordingly. We just let ourselves feel free to let the songs turn into what they need to
turn into. Yeah, and you can kind of notice, too, the crowd really, I feel like we're getting really good at reading people or just, like, in the audience and just kind of knowing what's working and what's not working and what attributes we need to, like, change. It's a fun process, honestly, because, like, by the time we hit our third tour, I feel like we've figured out how to play each individual song live.
Is this the third tour?
This is the third tour.
All right.
Some songs never work live. Some songs we just retire and are like, that's for the album only.
Right. Well, we've been speaking with Elena Moore and Patrick Riley, and also with us Patrick Meese, Tiffany Meese, and Nate Meese helping out. The album is called Ritual in Repeat. The band is Tennis. Guys, congratulations on the record, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you
for having us.
Get instant updates from Soundcheck anytime by following us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll tell you when you can listen to live performances happening in our studio, when we've got new interviews up for you to hear, and when we post new videos online. We're on Twitter at Soundcheck and on Facebook at facebook.com/WNYC Soundcheck.